You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Welcome to DNF. I'm Jessica Smetana. He's Spencer Hall. This is the finale edition of our podcast. We will, in fact, be effing, as in finishing the podcast this year. This is it, Spencer. Mm-hmm. We're going to be doing a little Abu Dhabi sort of recap, although
sort of.
maybe not. But mostly kind of just talking about the end of the season, the end of a dominant Red Bull season in Formula One that included the longest race schedule ever, and it certainly felt like it, getting to the finish line at the end here, and also just the most absolute dominant driver season that anyone's ever had by Max Verstappen. But we'll answer some questions and see where we go from here.
Yeah, it's hard to do a finale where you're going to talk about both the final race of the season and I think the overall season, because so little happened in the Abu Dhabi race. Not F1 needs to work on their script. We need to work on our scripting and on how we manage the season. I understand there's always a balance between the money and the power and the necessity to craft an interesting product. But realistically speaking, Vegas should have been the finale. It won't be next year, because there will in fact be two races. I think it goes Saudi, Abu Dhabi, between after Vegas last year. But for me, emotionally at least, the season ended with Las Vegas, Abu Dhabi becoming, you know, more of an afterthought. We were talking about this with a couple of the regular F1 beat writers, and they're like, yeah, this is just, it's off kilter. It's off rhythm. It's not how you would want this sort of premier tier sport to end things on a coda or an epilogue that sort of doesn't really feel like it matters a whole lot.
Yeah, and it does matter, because you had a battle for second. You had mm-hmm. a kind of, things still had to shake out in the Constructors' Cup, which I don't know if fans care quite as much about as the driver standings, but matters a lot to the teams and to the development of the cars and to how things kind of set up for next year. But yeah, after all is said and done, Sergio Perez gets second place behind Max Verstappen, and you know, Red Bull had already locked up the Constructors' Cup forever ago. But like you said, a kind of like anticlimactic finish after coming off of Brazil and Vegas, which are both, I think, more Vegas proved to be a better race, but Brazil with the type of like fan atmosphere there would be a fitting finale, and I think used to be the finale. So maybe, you know, 5 years from now they'll figure it out. But we've been talking since the beginning of the season about how non-spaced out some of the street circuits are at the front of the season, which mm-hmm. doesn't really help you get a sense for like who is doing well and how things will shake out. Didn't matter this year because Red Bull just dominated pretty much every single race. But yeah, ideally you would not finish this way, but they did, and that's it. It's over, Spencer.
It's done. And I have to say, it's very hard to call it a critique when you go, well, that's how it happened. You know, like, should have done something better. No one did anything better than Red Bull. Like, you were talking about the constructor standings. If you look at the gap between 2 and 1, it's comedy. 860 points to 409 for Mercedes. Red Bull was that far ahead. Max Verstappen was that far ahead of everyone. And I don't know how much could have been done about that when you go, oh, okay, F1 should have done this. No. You go back, you make a car, Red Bull hit on it. You know, Red Bull hit on it, everybody missed. I do think there were interesting things. For me, the story, when you go, okay, well, we can't pay attention, like, number one is already decided. You know, we're going to appreciate that. We're going to say, ooh, Max, awesome job. This is clearly the most dominant season by a single race car driver in the history of the sport. I feel pretty safe saying that. That's fine.
The results were, these are the race results by winner. Verstappen, Perez, Verstappen, Perez, Verstappen, Perez, Verstappen, 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 Verstappen.
Yeah, it's incredible the level of dominance that both Red Bull and within the team Max Verstappen managed to achieve. It's also amazing how much controversy we managed to dredge up over Sergio Perez, despite him being second in the points.
Solidly second.
And doing pretty much everything that he was hired to do. And yet we managed to go ahead and stir up some stories around that, which I know those were real, but still, for all of the noise and all of the static, it was Red Bull 1-2 all the way in pretty much every single race this season when you average it out. There is something, though, and there are a couple of different storylines where I go, okay, this was cool. I really enjoyed watching this. I enjoyed watching Aston and McLaren sort of trade places over the course of the season. I enjoyed the early season renaissance of Fernando Alonso. I thought that was a blast, strictly because
it was fun. We needed it too. Yeah. Alonso was like, if you're a college football fan, was like the Deion Sanders for like the first 3 weeks of the college football season, where it was like, wow, this is what's happening here. This is crazy. And then it was like, oh, but maybe it's not sustainable.
He's going to do it. To what? He's going to be competitive. He's going to be competitive.
And win then, some things.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe not.
To sum up the other half of Aston Martin season, I watched Gary Starsky try to do watch content with Lance Stroll's dad. Lawrence walked by and he said, oh, hey, can I talk about your watch? And this was after Lance, I don't know, it was Miami. I think he'd hit a wall or something.
Yeah.
And he goes, it's not a good time. So to summarize the Stroll experience on Aston Martin, it wasn't a good time.
That was a good Lawrence Stroll impression, by the way.
He has that kind of, you know, yes, the kind of supervillain voice.
Yeah, no, he's like the Penguin or like, I don't know, what's another Kingpin. Batman? Yeah, he's a Batman villain.
He's very Kingpin-ish, if I had to put him in that, because he's a big, honestly, big dude too. Like, very large dude. It's weird that he has the son who is not a massive guy, because Lawrence Stroll is kind of exactly what you would imagine. You go, textile magnate. Oh, God. Yeah. A guy who I imagine has probably done some negotiating with his fists at one point in his career as 100.
How do you think he got the watch?
Exactly. Yeah. I enjoyed McLaren's comeback. Once McLaren put the new gear out there, they became an entirely different team. They were the Vibes Kings. Like, if I were to go ahead and award Vibes Kings for the year, I 100% have to go with McLaren, because not only did Lando and Oscar make, I think, the most engaging duo in terms of getting along personality-wise and just generally being, you know, assets to the sport in terms of their, you know, radiant presence at the track every week. They were good. They were good, and they got better over the course of the season. So watching that comeback to me was extremely fun. I think the sport is, I'm going to engage in a cliche here, I think the sport is better when McLaren is good. I do.
The McLaren storyline certainly added a boost at a point in the season where there needed to be another like element for people to still be interested. I think like it came at the perfect time, right before, I mean, it was like in July, right? Like around Silverstone, where it was like, okay, here's something else to watch, because like we've talked about it before, like the midfield race is fun and we all care about that, but we really like the Ferraris and the Mercedes and the McLaren and the Aston Martins were kind of what people were interested in, given that Red Bull was so far ahead by that point in the season.
Yeah. I do want to answer a question really quick that I think we kind of have to get this one out of the way at the top. Because one thing from an American perspective, we're always going, well, I don't know. What about the growth of the sport here? What about the presence of the sport here? And we can get into that with this question from Pete Schaub. Listener Pete Schaub, was the dominance of Verstappen and Red Bull harmful to generating new fan interest into F1? Bluntly, yeah. I think that's not good. It's not good when there's very little competition at the top. However, I will say this. That I think that answer might be tempered with the understanding that I don't think dominance, I don't think sort of a dynastic dominance is necessarily a bad thing. I think it was the degree of the lack of competition between one, two. You know, I think like the degree to which they were better. It's not like Max was just a little bit better. No, he was so ridiculously far ahead and setting such... he led 1,000 laps this year.
Yeah. Max was dominant last season too, but there is a huge difference between how, like you said, how dominant than this season, which was like the first place was uncompetitive for the entire season.
And I think this is something that people, when they go, well, is it bad to have one team that's always good? No, I don't think that's true because one, that's typically been how the sport has run. It's been run in these long cycles of dominance. You know, we just came off of Mercedes. We're obviously in the Red Bull era now. That's how a lot of major sports go. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. The NFL had the Patriots run. The NBA's had, you know, numerous, you know, Lakers runs. We've had Warriors runs. We've had Bulls runs. You know, this is not... It's not the worst thing in the world because I think it is a way to make people literate one team at a time, right? You know, mm-hmm. say, okay, I may not know anything, but I'll root for the gorilla. I will root for the big guy. And the big guy right now is Red Bull. So I think by and large, I think the lack of competition was bad. I think it was bad for the sport and bad for its potential growth in the United States. Was it necessarily bad because one team won all the races? No. I think those are two different things here.
Mm-hmm. I also think it does make sense. I also think that two of the more compelling races that take place in the States happening after there was already a champion decided is just, again, like not the best timing and maybe unavoidable for Formula One. Like they can't move those races, but it doesn't help because like we just hear constantly how Formula One and Liberty Media wants to expand in the United States and sees dollar signs here. But when, the tickets aren't being sold to the Las Vegas race, I think part of it probably is that like there was not a ton of interest in who would win it.
No, there wasn't. I do think also that the Vegas race taking place at, 10:30 local time did not help.
No, I mean, I didn't like that at all. I will say one thing from this weekend that made me like Red Bull was Sergio Perez's reprimand for calling the stewards a joke. It's very silly. He said that the stewards are a joke. I cannot believe it. And they got really mad at him for what, to me, kind of innocuous.
I will. I said this when I was at Vegas. Is that place dropping when you go, well, when I was in Vegas, Vegas race, I have a lot of affection for the race personnel and stewards because they give off big Star Wars, NPC vibes that, all the guys you see in the background of Star Wars who are all wearing like orange jumpsuits and like toting
they
stuff.
They kind of like march around. Yeah.
Yeah. They're making the rebellion work. Right. And I have big affection for them because, they're not getting paid a whole lot. They're out there just doing their thing. And the stewards, of course, are a little bit different, but they're part of the crew for me. So, Sergio saying they're a joke. I get it. You can't do that. It's like criticizing the officiating.
NFL players get fined for it.
You get fined for it.
All the time.
Right?
Yeah.
In F1, at least there's reprimand, right? Like, how dare you?
Yes. They formally warned him. So it was like a warning with like a tuxedo on and a pipe.
They bring it. Yeah, they bring it to you on a little. It's a card.
Yes,
a
little silver platter. Correct.
Right.
This is our formal warning.
And they do that. And then nothing else happens. As long as you're not like these idiots.
And then it's time for tea. Yes.
And then it's time for your 3-week summer vacation. Yeah.
Right.
It's all very European. I love it. did love that. I also did love, by the way, like I wanted to get to this question, which I think plays into what we are talking about in terms of things we loved, things we didn't. Okay. How sad will Charles piano musical output on Spotify be this season? That's from Jim Prosser. Things we loved, things we didn't. Things I did not love. I did not love the continued tortured existence of Charles Leclerc. I think Leclerc had a great finish to the season. He had a strong finish. He did the best he could in a couple of races against impossible odds, ending up finishing well in both Vegas and in Abu Dhabi. I think that was great. I think if you go, okay, the screenwriters, right? The writers for this show that we watch, F1, that's a nice little turn. It's both realistic and satisfying. But how sad is it going to be this offseason for Charles Leclerc?
Well, I guess we'll find out. For people who aren't familiar, Charles released a Spotify track of him playing the piano this year, which I am not a music person, so I cannot review, but it's something that he likes to do. And as we know, a lot of Formula One drivers are very into music and are like part-time DJs. So when his new track comes out and it makes us all cry, we will know where his head is at going into next season. That poor, poor man.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ooh, this is another really good one. Is F1 going to nerf Red Bull? Okay, so for those of you not familiar with the concept of nerfing, I will explain that to you as an old. I know this because I have kids, and they talk about this. In video games, when something is far too powerful, then a patch or an update is issued into the game code to make it less powerful, less potent. I don't know. Jessica, do you play any video games whatsoever?
I used to, but I was too, it was too intense. I used to bite my Game Boy all the time, but... Right. I'll understand the references.
Right. So this is, you know, if there's a gun or a character that just simply, you know, can't be handled, they'll nerf it and they'll make him weaker and more in line with the overall strengths and weaknesses of any other character.
Mm-hmm.
Nerfing in Red Bull's case would be bringing them back to the pack. I do not know how that is really possible under the current rules of F1. I do not.
I agree with you. And actually, I think that because it's Red Bull and Christian Horner, who is like in many ways like the face of the sport for a lot of people, it just makes it even more unlikely. And again, I'm with you. I don't know how they would or how they could. I also think that this year, as dominant as Verstappen was, like, I wouldn't be surprised if this happened again next year, given like where their car is at in relation to the field. Like, obviously, like, anyone could surprise us, and maybe like other teams will get closer next season. But I still think Red Bull has such a significant advantage that I feel like we'll be talking about this at the same time next year too.
Yeah, this is, by the way. And the real problem with this, I just don't want to say I don't know and not give particulars. Many of the things that Red Bull has done in terms of the aero profile of that car, talking to people who know way more than I do about said machine, it's not one thing. It's an additive product of all of the little tweaks and improvements that they've made. It's not like they've diversified the advantage they have over other teams with all of the little tweaks that they've done to improve airflow and give them such an advantage on the track, you know. And I think that's the reason, because if F1 chooses one or two things, there's still two or three or four or five other things that Red Bull has done better that other teams are simply either going to have to catch up to. And the chance of catching up to all of them and figuring out, you know, whatever the like brain trust at Red Bull has done it is in itself, you can view that as a distraction to the things you're trying to accomplish, right? Like McLaren has obviously done a lot of things to narrow the gap between themselves and the rest of the field. But if they start worrying about all of the things that Red Bull's done, then that's going to be a dangerous and expensive diversion from the mission they had, right, to improve mm-hmm. their car. So it's a catch-22 because you might try to figure out what they've done, but it's going to keep you from devoting resources and, most importantly, time, which there is not a whole lot of, right?
Right.
I think this is one thing that fans can now appreciate. It is November 28th, right? They got to build a car that's going to be ready in March, before March, even.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great point. I don't think like there's not one specific technological advantage that in like you're in seasons past where a car has developed something that other cars aren't doing that gives them a huge advantage. Like that's not the case. They're better at everything right now.
Yeah, including the rear suspension. As Doug, our producer, is in our ears figuring out the rear suspension on the RB19 is yet another thing. So even if you figure out all the aero stuff, even if you figure out all of the, like, you know, Adrian Newey brained, I can see air move mm-hmm. kind of, you know, magic behind whatever they're doing, then you get to the rear suspension. You can see where this could be a huge distraction for an engineering team trying to keep up with them, right? So do you worry about that, or do you just try to make a better car given what you can do?
Here's a question. Does Red Bull's dominance become more palatable for fans if Lewis Hamilton had indeed inquired to be part of that team for next season, as Christian Horner claimed earlier this week?
Man, Christian Horner will just say some shit.
That was a necessary plot line in what was a pretty like dull mm-hmm. news week. Christian Horner, if you missed this, said that Lewis Hamilton had reached out to Red Bull before he signed his extension with Mercedes to inquire about joining Red Bull and being, you know, racing alongside Max Verstappen. And then Lewis Hamilton was like, I did not do that. And no one from my management team did that. Mm-hmm. And then Christian Horner was like, oh, it was actually his dad. His dad reached out to me. And the entire thing sounds like Christian Horner kind of getting caught in a lie.
Either a lie or getting caught in some sort of dad. Like, because, you know, if you're right. a parent, maybe you do that. I don't know. Like, you know,
I mean, everyone's parents like do things that embarrass them at times, right?
Everyone's parents are a little out of pocket when it comes to you because that's their job, you
right.
know?
Especially when it comes to like, you know, your athletic endeavors and like maybe you're not winning as many games as your parents think you should mm-hmm. be, or like your coach isn't putting you in at the right time. So
this has big like this does have big
dad energy.
It does, right? It has actually. I was thinking it kind of has mom matchmaker energy.
Mm, you know what does like, that mean?
Have you met my son?
Ah, Red Bull? Okay. Yes,
Lewis. Lewis. He's not single, but he's looking. You know,
doesn't Lewis look great? You know how your number one driver only wears like your team merch all the time? What if you had a guy next to him wearing Versace?
Yeah. But by the way, all of this is going to be happening so quickly if you do find yourself needing to construct a winning race car, because the Bahrain GP is in 96 days.
That's just
96 days.
I have, seriously, Spencer, I want to ask you your opinion on this because you've been watching the sport longer than I have. Like the season is too long. Like, yes or no?
I think it's too spread out, but that is a byproduct of lengthy breaks for holiday and a couple of big gaps between races that are geographically really far apart. So I don't know if we have too many races. I do think they're too spread out. So I think the sport itself sometimes leaves the stage for uncomfortably long periods of time and people tend to wander.
Yeah, that's fair, especially like earlier in the season with like, you know, some canceled races and stuff like that. It ended up feeling like very like bottom heavy this year, but it is a really short off season, like you said, but the on and off nature, including several different time zones week to week, especially like this last, you know, 2 months feels a little much for the attention spans of people, especially when you have had a champion named for a while.
It does. It goes on so long they can take a seasonal break. That should say something, that they take a seasonal break. It's wild. I also wanted to laugh at Luke Smith, the F1 writer, longtime F1 writer, and currently writing for The Athletic, who underneath the F1 tweet about Bahrain is in 96 days, just wrote, admin why?
He's got a great point.
If you've hung out with those people, the crew who actually go to every race and write about these things.
I cannot imagine.
A bear. You cannot imagine the travel schedule. That just absolutely crushes these people's schedules and lives.
Even just for the people that work on the teams, like, they're not making, you know, Lewis Hamilton money. They're not flying private jets places, right? Like, they don't get to see their families. They're just constantly on the road going, like, to multiple different continents and then, like, back to that continent again and then back again. It just is absolutely crazy. Next season, there's 24 races. It's just absolutely wild,
including a couple that were not on the calendar this year. They're in week five or race five, returning to Shanghai, running the street circuit, right? Which is immediate, of course. Naturally, the transition from that is to Miami. The naturally Shanghai to Miami switch. Additionally, the end of the season that we were complaining about as being anticlimactic is extended. There's a race at Lusail in Qatar following the Vegas race on November 23rd. And then the season will conclude at Abu Dhabi at Yas Marina, which I always say like that. Yas.
Do we have any more questions we want to answer, Spencer? I think maybe we should also mention, like, this is our last episode of the season, and we TBD if we're coming back next year. I do not know that yet. All, so don't ask us because we don't know.
We're all year to year, day to day. I will try to find some way to continue doing this no matter what, but I certainly hope that we're back. Any other questions we want to answer? Somebody said fix Haas. No. No, Haas is where you go to have your faith in racing and your own ability tested by God. God in this case is real mean.
Can we give it up for Williams while we're here?
Let's give it up for Williams.
We should give it up for Williams.
Absolutely.
I loved the Joshua Vowles' like non-answer about Logan Sargeant coming back too this weekend. So,
listen, shouts out to, you know, JJ Vowles, DJ Vowles here, okay? Because we had three teams. Like, I would, like, if you want to give shouts out to things, maybe that's what we should do right here, because I know that I have several things that I just want to go. Okay. One, shouts out to Williams. Shouts out to Alex Albon, who, managed to overperform despite being under-equipped in every single way. Williams managed to finish ahead of AlphaTauri, Alfa Romeo, and Haas Ferrari. I'm going to keep it positive and not be like, oh, hey, Alpha was trash, even though Alpha was kind of trash. I love y'all, but you're kind of trash. Sometimes people you love are trash. They were kind of garbage.
Shout out to Yuki.
Shout out to Yuki, who every time, I love that every time anybody was asked at sort of, you know, the Red Bull AlphaTauri offices were asked about Yuki, they were like, we're very happy with what he's doing. Meaning that car isn't anything, but he's still managing to exceed expectations.
Steady Eddie, especially as the seat next to him was occupied by three different people this season. He just kept driving away.
Yeah.
Shout out to George Russell's haircut. He apparently cut it because it was getting in his eyes during racing. I think I read that somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So shout out to that. We didn't get to talk. Shout out to Valtteri Bottas's butt calendar, which our producer Doug now owns, and I feel like I should own. I should order that.
I think I have one on the way. That's how much Valtteri Bottas ass merchandise I already own. I'm not sure whether I've already ordered it or not because I own the previous edition of Valtteri's for charity.
Yes, of course. He has been like slow rolling it out on Instagram for like 3 weeks. So I love the marketing job that he's doing on his Instagram. Everyone should check that out.
Yeah. You know what? My favorite moment of the season, and a season where things were relatively without drama. I loved qualifying laps at Monaco. Those were absolutely thrilling. And I loved Max Verstappen after a solid week of complaining and being extremely Max Verstappen about everything. I loved Max Verstappen taking a breath to actually enjoy himself and sing Viva Las Vegas over the mic at Vegas. That's spectacular.
I was thinking last week after you mentioned Viva Las Vegas, how there is a, I know that there are people like this exist because I'm one of them. The first time they heard Viva Las Vegas was in the Viagra commercial where they sang Viva Viagra. And that's the only, like, I realized later in life that there were, the actual words were Viva Las Vegas. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
I think there's a sweet spot. If you were born in the mid 90s, yes, you are with me on this.
Yes.
Please tweet at me to confirm.
I do remember the ads. Yes.
It would have been great if Max sang that. I think my favorite part of the season was Singapore, because it was the first time that I was like, oh, wow, someone different's going to win. So shout out to Carlos and Lando and Lewis for that podium.
Yeah. Thank you for the variety.
We needed one. We needed one of them.
You got one. That's it. Otherwise, steady diet of RB19.
And I've memorized the Dutch national anthem by now.
An extremely grumpy Dutch man.
Just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. Shout out to Max Verstappen, by the way. Max will answer your question. You may not like the answer, but he's going to give you an honest answer every single time. And I do appreciate, I think he's gotten better at that. I do. I think he's gotten much better at, this is who I am, and I'm going to present it, but I'm not going to be a dick about it. This is just going to be very flat and
it's called not being like 21 anymore, right?
Yeah. No, he's like, no, this, I didn't like that. I like this. I don't like that. I'm going to go back to my sim racing unit now.
All right. Well, shall we? Anything else?
I think that is about it. If you have been listening this entire season, we thank you for your patronage.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I hope to talk to you next season in just 96 days.
It's unfathomable to me, Spencer. Yeah. 96 days.
Hey, listen, so many things to look forward to next year. I want to see, and maybe this is where we close, you know, I want to see the continued development of Oscar Piastri. Would love to do that. I'm looking forward to whatever silly season has to bring us. If there are any surprises left in that.
I think there will be. There seems to be a lot unsettled at this point in the season versus last year.
One hopes.
I could be wrong.
I enjoyed the drama as long as it's relatively harmless and Yuki Tsunoda ends up with a seat. I am looking forward to seeing whether Mercedes can take it back to the garage and sort of maintain the one and get back to 1-1A with Red Bull instead of the clear 1-2. And I am also looking forward to another season of Martin Brundle wandering the grid, desperately trying to figure out who he is, where he is, and who he's supposed to talk to.
We can only hope.
Thanks, y'all.